and welcome to The Rover, the podcast for the Astrobiological Research and Education Society. I'm David Merced, and today I'm joined by Charlotte Applin and Joshua Weissman. And today we're going to talk about the history of spaceflight.
But before we do that, a little bit of an introduction to ourselves. We are three astrobiology majors studying at Florida Institute of Technology, and all three of us are going to be in some way responsible for the podcast episodes you all listen to. I am Josh.
I'm Charlotte.
And I'm David.
And without further ado, let's talk about the history of space travel.
So before we talk about actually getting into space, you need something first. You need to go very fast.
Because it takes a lot of speed to get to space.
You may or may not know that. But who likes to go fast? Every country in the world likes to go fast.
I like to go fast.
You like to go fast, Josh? How about you, David?
I think everybody likes to go fast. It's pretty fun. I mean, you know, I'm a roller coaster guy.
Yes. So it's a bit of a competition in this kind of case. And while the United States was not the first country to launch a ballistic missile, they were the first to break the sound barrier in 1947. At first, people thought you couldn't break the sound barrier. That's why it was a barrier. But they did manage it, and now we're able to go much, much faster than that. So World War II is over. What do people do with the ability to go fast?
Well, they build as many fast missiles as they can, and it puts the whole world on edge. I'm talking the Cold War.
Oh, goody.
Ah, yes. And this leads us to the space race. We got the Soviet Union and the United States racing to see who can launch themselves off this planet the fastest.
Because space is an asset.
I mean, yeah, you can do so much in space. Like, once you reach orbit around the Earth, you could spy on the enemy or launch missiles from there. And when the Soviet Union released Sputnik 1 in October of 1957, we freaked out because we were thinking they were going to do just that. We were hearing beep, beep, and we didn't know, like, are they going to throw something at us? Are we all going to die?
If I heard mysterious beeping, I would definitely lose it.
It made a bunch of noise, but it made a huge impact because that noise could be heard on radios, in communication, like, from military people going back and forth.
Oh, those military people.
Yeah, and the Soviet Union didn't even say much about this. Like, it just happened. And we're like, they didn't say anything.
So what happens next?
They released a sequel, Sputnik 2.
Ooh, I love sequels.
Ah, yes, this one was even better. It had a dog in it. Her name was Laika. She was a mutt that they took off the street. You know, they strapped her inside the rocket and launched her around the Earth in orbit. And she died on the way back. But, you know, the whole mission was to get her there in the first place. You know, they weren't ready to take people back.
Jeez.
There are a lot of casualties in war.
Even a Cold War? Somehow.
Ironic, because she died in a fire.
Dave!
Oh my god!
You don't have to...
You don't have to tell people how she died. You don't have to do that. Let's just move on. I can't handle too much more about dead dogs.
Talk about the U.S. response to everyone's favorite dog.
The U.S. responded to everyone's favorite dog with a fire. David, what the crap? Because the U.S.'s response was a satellite that they were going to launch out into orbit, and it was going to be a huge, momentous moment, but it just didn't make it off of the launch pad and exploded.
Into flames. But in January 1958, only about a month later, Explorer 1 launched. It was the first satellite with an onboard telemetry system, so it actually returns data from space, unlike Sputnik. So it was pretty cool.
It was a little more useful than Sputnik, so whatever.
Humble brag.
Hashtag humble brag. All right, so moving on. We keep going, and we keep, you know, making small strides, and eventually, we're thinking, we're gonna be ready to launch a man into space.
that's pretty exciting to have people in space.
Exactly. We're going to be launching some people in space. And the USA did not get there first.
Because the Soviet Union came out of the blue and said, guess what? We launched a guy named Yuri Gagarin into space, and he went in orbit around the Earth, and he came back, and he survived. And we sat there like, are you serious? You couldn't let us have our moment?
I can't believe the Soviet Union kill-steeled the U.S.
But never fear, because the U.S. could still do it. We could still manage it. We got Alan Shepard into space about a month later, in May of 1961.
Yay!
Hooray. And that man was Alan Shepard.
Okay, we've been talking about all the men. What about the women?
The women. You want to know about the first woman in space?
Yeah.
Yes, so the first woman in space was from the Soviet Union. Her name was Valentina Tereshkova, and that happened in 1963, pretty early on.
Ooh, nice.
Yes, the second woman in space was Svetlana Savitskaya, who was actually the first woman to do a spacewalk, and that didn't actually happen until the 80s. Yeah, so it was a while. And then Sally Ride was the third woman in space, also in 1983. And she was the first American woman, which is very exciting. And it took NASA a while to get women into space because for a long time they required astronauts to be military test pilots.
Yeah.
And that wasn't a career open to women at the time, yeah.
But before women got into space, a third country entered space. Guess which one it was. Go on, guess.
Josh, I know which one it was. It's common knowledge.
Yes, everyone knows which country was the third one into space. You all at home, you know which country was the third country into space.
Of course.
Don't need to talk about it. We're moving right along.
It's, of course, it was Canada.
Oh, Canada.
Canada is well known for their space program.
Absolutely. Would you mind elaborating on this common knowledge as I do air quotes?
Right. So Canada built their own satellite and sent it to space from a NASA base in 1962. It was Alouette 1, and it was going to study the ionosphere, which is an area in the atmosphere above the ozone layer. So that's pretty cool. France could also have a claim to third in space because they actually launched from their own base.
Ooh.
Yeah.
But it was in 1965. Technically Canada got there first.
Canada for the win.
Yeah, but France also didn't piggyback off of NASA. So.
Yeah, well, the real piggybackers are the UK. The UK.
Brits.
Yes, the UK paid NASA to make a satellite for them, and then they were like, it's ours, we did it.
So moving right along to the next big thing in space history. What was that thing, Charlotte?
The moon!
The moon. Everyone remembers this because it was such a historic moment in space travel.
If you ask any American, they will say it was the most important thing done in space ever.
But it was brought about by one special man who set the goal for us and said, hey, we're going to get to the moon by the end of this decade. And that man was President John F. Kennedy.
Yeah, he was a huge fan of NASA. He was really optimistic about the goal that we would reach the moon. And it's a tragedy that he never got to see it happen.
Rest in peace, JFK.
I don't have any rest in peace music, so I'll just play him this foghorn.
Let's all have a moment of silence as we remember JFK with our RIP sound. Thank you.
I hate this so much. So the moon.
On our way to the moon, we had to take baby steps because obviously you can't just launch and then go to the moon and then say, hey, we did it, right? You've got to take baby steps.
There's a lot of checkpoints to hit along the way.
Right. To get to the moon, number one, we got to be able to work inside and outside of the spacecraft. So the Gemini program helped with that. We got spacesuits working better than they were before, and we got people working outside of the spacecraft. Also, what happened in Gemini? Space rendezvous / space dockings. We were able to launch two spacecraft and have them meet up in a place and connect and have a good time. They had a great time together.
I love connecting with people and having a great time together.
I'm really happy with those spacecraft. When was their wedding again?
When one spacecraft and another spacecraft love each other very much.
So moving right along, after we did that, we thought, hey, now we can actually go to the moon. We just have to have enough power to get there, and we can go to the moon. And Apollo 1 came to launch, and we were like, yes, we're going to get there this time. And it didn't turn out great.
What happened to Apollo 1, Josh?
There was a cabin fire in Apollo 1, which led to the deaths of the astronauts Gus Grissom, Roger Chaffee, and Edward White. And NASA went crazy. They were like, we cannot let this happen to anyone ever again. We can't let more people die at our hands because we made a mistake. So they literally took apart everything they knew about Apollo, and they fixed any bug that they could find, trying to make it better and safer than ever. And it worked because they came out with Apollo 8, which launched and went in orbit around the moon and was the first spacecraft to do so.
That's fantastic.
Yep. And sure enough, the next thing that happened, well, the next major thing that happened, Apollo 11, with Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, and the third astronaut, Michael Collins.
Everybody remembers Michael Collins, right?
They better.
Well, it's okay if you don't remember Michael Collins because, well, it's not okay if you don't remember Michael. I'm digging myself a hole here.
Please remember Michael Collins.
He didn't go around the moon for you guys to forget about him.
What did Michael Collins do?
Michael Collins never actually landed on the moon. He was orbiting the moon in the spaceship, waiting for the others to come back to him. So while Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin went down to the surface of the moon, walked on the moon, said those famous first words on the moon, Michael Collins was just waiting in orbit around the moon for them to come back.
Yeah, and he also had a rough time because there were several 48-minute intervals where he'd lose contact with both Mission Control and the other astronauts, because he was literally on the other side of the moon. And that's probably got to be the most isolated a human has ever been. Not only is he thousands of miles away from the Earth, but he's also completely cut off from anybody.
That's terrifying.
It is.
Michael Collins, very brave.
But when Michael Collins was, you know, orbiting the moon, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin were going down to the moon, and I gotta tell you, their story on landing on the moon is so incredible. It reads like an adventure novel, because Neil Armstrong, he's piloting the lander to the moon, to the original landing site that NASA had agreed upon, and he looks at it and he says, this doesn't look right to me. It's different, it looks a bit more rocky and a bit more uneven, and it doesn't look like it's safe to land here. So, at the last second, he opts out of that. He opts out of landing in the original designated spot and goes somewhere else. So they're flying around the moon trying to find another place to land, and Neil Armstrong somehow finds somewhere to land and lands with very little fuel left in a place that was not the original place they were supposed to land. It's incredible. So the first moon mission, a success. And we went back several more times. The last Apollo mission was Apollo 17, which after Apollo 17, space race was done. The Soviets were down for the count. We had officially made it to the moon, reached our objective, and beaten them.
Kennedy knew that the moon was going to be a trump card. He knew that the moon, that was it.
Until
you can get to Mars. And the Soviets did try to get to Mars, but it didn't really pan out for them. Crashed on the surface. David, why are you looking at me like this? What do you have something to say?
I was thinking that you were like saying that they tried to send a man to Mars.
No, they did not try to send a person to Mars.
I was going
to
say, whoa.
No.
Just some science stuff, you know, not a dude.
The next thing to reach Mars was one of the U.S.'s rovers, which we'll get to in a moment.
More important things happened before that we can get to the rovers.
Because we've got the Voyagers.
Oh, the Voyagers. So we said, hey, space? Pretty dang cool. We should study it a little bit more. And we did.
Yeah, we decided we wanted to get some more close-up information on some of the outer planets. And they sent out the twin probes, Voyager 1 and Voyager 2, out into space. They were both launched in the late 70s in Cape Canaveral, Florida. Voyager 2 was launched first, but he got a little slow, and his brother passed him up.
It really do be like that.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you just stumble.
Your younger siblings succeed more than you.
Well, to be fair, Voyager 2 did stop at Uranus and Neptune, right?
Yeah. The mission was originally supposed to last, like, 5 years. They thought after 5 years, both of these probes would be dead and useless. But they were still going after 5 years. And their missions to Saturn and Jupiter went so well that they not only extended the missions, but they decided to send Voyager 2 to Uranus and Neptune. And to this day, it is still the only probe to have done so. I mean, you could count New Horizons, but it didn't stop at Uranus or Neptune. It just went straight on to Pluto.
And both are now currently in interstellar space. Voyager 1 reached it in August of 2012, and Voyager 2 reached it in November of 2018. So both are still running and still going.
It's been more than 40 years. That's really cool.
Exactly. And if someone ever tells you you can't do something, tell them, well, they told the Voyagers they wouldn't last more than 5 years, and here they are over 30 years later, almost 40.
If they're in their 40s, are they Gen X? The Mars rovers are millennials.
That would make them millennials. Goodness. The Mars rovers are millennials, absolutely.
Well, no, I think 2012 is not millennial. 2012.
Oh, no, that is Gen Z.
But it's solidly Gen Z.
No, but they weren't in their 2012. They're 40 years old. They're millennials.
We're talking about
40-year-olds aren't millennials. If you're like 37, you're a millennial.
Are we talking about the Voyagers or the rovers?
We're talking about the Voyagers. Right?
Oh, yeah, they're probably not millennials. They're probably not millennials.
Yeah, they're Gen X.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's pretty exciting to think that we have some Gen Xers over in interstellar space right now.
But moving right along, the next manned missions to space, because Voyager 1, Voyager 2, they were still robotics, you know.
Hey, don't diss robots. They're pretty good.
I don't diss robots. I think robots are very important because they don't die as easily as humans. Humans are real squishy. But, you know, there's nothing like a human touch to things. And we decided to keep sending humans into space through the space shuttle program. But not just sending humans into space. No, no, no. We brought humans and the thing we were launching those humans on right back down to Earth. We made the first reusable spacecraft with the space shuttle missions.
Reduce, reuse, recycle.
Yeah, and it saved us a lot of money because we didn't have near as much funding as when we were going to the moon, but we saved money by reusing some space stuff.
Yeah, it's nice. Saving money was a big thing because as soon as the moon landing was over, our funding disappeared.
But the space shuttle program was not without its faults. We lost two space shuttles along with crew. The Challenger, which exploded in January of 1986, 73 seconds after launch. One of the rocket boosters came loose and ruptured the external fuel tank. and all 7 crew members were killed, as well as the first teacher in space, Krista McAuliffe. And yeah, it was...
And several years after that, we had the Columbia disaster. The shuttle was re-entering the atmosphere on February 1st, 2003, when a piece of insulation broke off and damaged the left wing, and the shuttle eventually exploded, and all 7 crew members, again, were killed. It was a horrifying thing for people to see. It was, both disasters were significant losses for NASA, and the whole nation felt it. It was a very grim day both times.
But on the term of happier notes,
let's talk about the Mars rovers.
Because that's kind of going to bring us into where we're going next in space.
It's easy to think about, oh, well, what's the next planet after Earth? Mars. Mars has been fascinating for a while, and people have always wanted to kind of go there. It shows up a lot in like science fiction. But you gotta take your baby steps to get there. It's a lot further than the moon. So what we've done is we sent some orbiters, we sent some landers before, but in 1997, we landed the first wheeled vehicle on Mars that would be Sojourner.
Ooh.
Yes. Now, Sojourner isn't very big. It can't do a whole lot. But the fact that it can just drive around on Mars's surface was really cool.
So for a while, they had the ultimate RC car.
Yeah.
Then they put in the ultimate they tricked out the ultimate RC car.
Oh, yeah.
To have scientific instruments.
Oh,
and they launched that,
yeah,
into space with Spirit and Opportunity.
Yeah, that took place now, in 2004.
So now we can conduct scientific research while doing donuts in the Martian sink.
But also we were looking for, you know, water on Mars.
While doing donuts.
Yeah, kick it up with your donuts, you know?
Yep, you gotta look in the dirt if you want to find the ice. Because now we know it's there.
So when did Curiosity join the mix?
Curiosity actually landed on Mars pretty recently, in 2012. And it was looking for conditions to support life, like in the past. Testing for things that may have been alive but no longer are.
And it is currently the only rover still running on Mars.
And we had a scare recently with Curiosity. There was a point where a sandstorm was coming, and whenever a sandstorm comes, they have to retract their solar panels so that they can, so they don't get damaged in the sandstorm. And after they're there for a while, the solar panels are really their only source of power because their batteries have long since run out. And our last transmission was, it's getting dark and my batteries are low. And the next day, we heard nothing. So they were thinking it had gotten damaged or something, and you know, everyone was upset because, you know, the last rover had died, but miraculously, it just started sending transmissions again. They were thinking that its solar panels had gotten covered in dust or something, and it was sitting there dead until some wind blew it off, and then it woke up. But we had a scare that day. You know, it turns out Curiosity was being a little lazy, but...
You cannot call Curiosity lazy.
Lazy?
Curiosity has been doing more work on Mars than any other person.
Curiosity did work on Mars when you were in middle school. Curiosity does overtime. Curiosity does not take holidays off.
How many holidays have you taken, David?
I only took one for my wisdom teeth.
No. I distinctly remember you were out for many days.
You've been out for more than that.
Well, yeah, one day at a time.
This is ridiculous. I can't even believe that you just called. No
disrespect for the Mars rovers in my house. I think not.
Never, never
again.
David,
your podcast fired.
And that brings us to the future, where we're going, because we're going to Mars. We're gonna go there eventually. The first Mars missions.
And we're going back to the moon.
Yeah, we are.
2024, probably.
2024, look out for the Artemis missions going back to the moon. But more quickly than that, in 2020,
mm-hmm,
we're going to see another rover go up to Mars.
I am so psyched.
So psyched. But space has grown since the olden days, where it was just the U.S. going up and doing things. Now we've got more space agencies in various countries, like the European Space Agency for the European Union.
Yeah, Europe had a bunch of small countries doing their things, but now in the modern age, they've all sort of banded together to make the ESA. And the US and Russia, of course, are both still around, but now we have more littler countries going on. So we have Brazil, we have Japan, we have Canada, they're all on the International Space Station.
And they've all collaborated to keep going up into space.
Do more research.
Yeah.
It's all very exciting. Everyone is very excited about space.
The future looks very exciting because one of the reasons we kind of took a while with the space race is because it was just two nations running simultaneously. And they were both running into the same issues because they weren't communicating with each other. And now that all of these different agencies can communicate with each other, we can get things done a lot quicker.
But not just these national agencies. No, we have private agencies as well. We've got SpaceX, run by billionaire Elon Musk.
Crazy billionaire Elon Musk.
Who recently landed a spaceship back on Earth, which had never been done before. We don't usually land things on Earth. We don't usually land spacecraft back on Earth, with the exception of the space shuttles, because they were designed to land back on Earth. But, like, this is a full-on rocket landing back on Earth. Usually we just toss them into the ocean and then collect them.
Everyone thought Elon Musk was crazy at first a few years ago. We thought, this isn't going to take off. But SpaceX has made amazing progress in recent years with their Falcon.
And SpaceX is not the only private company going to space. There's Sierra Nevada, Boeing, Lockheed Martin. All of these companies that are private are going to space, and they're also in the collaboration mix with NASA and with all of these agencies worldwide. Now, there is one space agency that is a national space agency that is not currently collaborating with all of the other space agencies for political reasons, and that is China. They have security concerns, and their agency and the U.S. Space Agency does not interact.
But they're still doing some interesting things. They recently landed on the dark side of the moon.
Which is pretty dang cool,
I have to say.
But back to the other countries. What are our goals on Mars, Charlotte?
Well, right now we're really working on understanding Mars a little bit better, and understanding the climate of Mars and the geology of Mars and seeing how it's different to Earth. Because we have humans on Earth. We know what humans need on Earth. We know how we live on Earth. But if we want to be on another planet living on it, we need to adapt the conditions there.
Are you saying colonize Mars?
Wouldn't that be really cool?
That'd be so cool. Imagine humans on multiple planets. That's pretty dang cool.
Yeah. And we can also see, like, was there anything alive on Mars once? We're still looking at that with the rovers, of course. But having people on Mars doing their own research, they'll be able to find out a lot more.
Like I said before, there's a little bit, the human touch has a little something extra added to it. It's just a little bit more.
A little bit more oxygen, but yes.
Well, we need a little bit more oxygen to get humans to Mars. See, launching robots up to Mars is easy because they're less squishy than humans are. But launching humans up to Mars, that's a little bit more of a difficult task. And we're taking that task on, but we're not quite there yet. And we're going to be there eventually because we've mapped out that is our goal. That's our next place to visit. But we're not there yet. But it's a funny thing about space, because there's always a next frontier, and there's always more to do. And so we can keep going and keep exploring further into the universe, the galaxy, the solar system even. Mars isn't the last stop. Oh no, we've got several more stops. We can go to Jupiter's moons, we can go beyond to any other planet in the solar system. We can even keep going past that to find Earth-like planets out in our galaxy. The bottom line is, this isn't the end. We're going to be doing a lot more for a lot longer.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of The Rover. If you're interested in more astrobiology, you can take a look at our Twitter and Instagram accounts. Both are at Ares Research, that is A-R-E-S Research, for more information about astrobio and related topics, as well as a peek at any projects that our other club members are working on. Until next time!